Good evening and welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Our weekly conversations always include you. And if you'd like to join us anytime during the program, our number is 941-3689. That's the number if you're on Oahu, 941-3689. And if you call us from the neighbor islands or if you're listening to the live stream someplace else, you can join us at 877-941-3689. You may have heard that about 1 in 68 children in the U.S. has been identified with autism spectrum disorder. That information comes from the Autism and Developmental Disabilities Monitoring Network, funded by the CDC, to estimate the number of U.S. kids with autism spectrum disorder and other developmental disabilities. It looked at 8-year-olds in 11 communities in 2010. For parents of autism spectrum kids nationwide, the big issue after diagnosis is where to get treatment and how to pay for it. And Hawaii is no different in that, with this exception. Hawaii is not one of the 38 states with legislation to make sure autism diagnosis and treatment are covered by insurance. That may change if one of a pair of bills, one introduced in the House and the other in the Senate, move to a successful conclusion this session. Tonight, we'll look at those bills with our panel. Joining me tonight is Senator and Emergency Room Doctor Josh Green. He represents the 3rd District on the Big Island and is the Senate Committee on Health Chairman. Last session, he advocated for similar legislation and introduced Senate Bill 791 this time around. We're also joined by Lori Sheely Unum. She is a lawyer and a professor and the mother of 3 children, Ryan, 13, who has autism, Christopher, 10, and Jonathan, 7. In 2005, she wrote groundbreaking autism insurance legislation for South Carolina, known as Ryan's Law, that passed in 2007. Since then, she has championed the national movement toward autism insurance reform as the head of the state government affairs for the New York-based nonprofit Autism Speaks. She also teaches at George Washington University Law School, the only law school course in the nation devoted to legal issues surrounding autism. And to round out our panel, Dr. Ryan Lee is here. He is a neurodevelopmental pediatrician at Shriners Hospital for Children in Honolulu and the director of the Neurodevelopmental Clinic and director of medical research. He's also the president of the Autism Society. And, of course, you're here, too. And, again, you're welcome to join us at 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Thank you all for being here.
Thanks, Beth Ann.
Thank you for letting me bungle your name, Lori Unum. Thank you so much for being here. We appreciate the fact that you've just landed and are here with us today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
We have been looking at issues surrounding autism for decades in Hawaii. I'm thinking that we've had many, many shows on Town Square over the last 15 years looking at what do families with autistic children in Hawaii do? How do they get treatment? How do they get a diagnosis? All of those things. And we've talked about that before, Dr. Lee. But in looking at this year's legislation, Josh Green, this is the same issue that many other states have been dealing with and that you tried to make happen last year. This year, any better chances in your mind with the legislation?
Yes, I do believe there are. First of all, thanks for taking up this critical issue, Beth Ann. There are some reasons I do believe it will pass this year. One is that the new Medicaid rules that have now been established make it very clear that it's covered. Families who have children with autism spectrum disorder can get their care. They can get services now if they happen to have Medicaid. So it becomes both heart-wrenching and unconscionable that we not cover all children. There should never be anything that distinguishes one family from another when their child needs care. The truth is if a child has autism spectrum and they get a lot of service, they get a lot of good therapy, they do great. They can improve their lives. It helps their families. It helps society. So we just need to take a stand. But that's the thing that's changed. I have reached out to the insurance industry to make the case. They have been willing partners in the discussion. We start hearing the bill tomorrow. And God, I hope we pass this bill. It really is important for a lot of families.
Lori Unum, you've been running around the country since the landmark legislation that you helped craft in your home state of South Carolina because of your son. And now there are 38 other states, or 38 states total, in a little better than 7 years. When you look back at us from the mainland looking at Hawaii, are you at all bemused that Hawaii isn't as progressive in some ways as it thinks it is.
It's a little surprising that Hawaii would be among the last dozen states to enact autism insurance reform. You're thought of as more progressive and also thought of as a community that cares very deeply for your children and families. So, yes, it is surprising, but I think it's taken a little time for the stars to align, and Senator Green has worked hard behind the scenes with the insurance industry, which has been adamantly opposed to this legislation in the past. He's worked hard this year to bring everyone to the table and try to reach some consensus terms. So I think the time is right to make it happen this year.
As you look at the journey of other states, do you see some parallel situations with Hawaii from which we might better learn as we're talking about this now after all these other states already have this legislation?
A number of states have tiptoed into coverage, if you will. Some states have been more progressive and have enacted autism insurance legislation that covers an individual at any age and covers whatever treatment is medically necessary. Other states have been a little bit afraid to pass coverage that's that comprehensive, and so have restricted the coverage by putting age limitations on the coverage or dollar restrictions on the coverage. And my understanding is that we're looking at similar caps and restrictions here in Hawaii. That has been done in other states. It's a little disappointing to me as a lawyer and as a mom to see those restrictions, but I do firmly believe we got to get something on the books and we've got to get going.
So, Josh Green, we're tiptoeing?
I'd say we're taking a giant step, but you know me to be kind of a far left winger on this kind of health stuff. So if I thought I could just be a dictator, which I am not, you know, of course I would go all in immediately on all these issues. But I agree with Lori and what she said. We're taking a cautious step, like some states, but this bill, though, provide about $250,000 of coverage. And it'll take one heck of a large burden off of families if we do it. Do I wish we had no limitations in any way? You know, that's kind of the way I feel. But you've heard me talk about single payer issues, you know. So I'm just thinking that this is the right year. We have some very good people in the insurance industry. They want to do the right thing. I know. I think that sometimes they've been gun shy because in a small state, they're really worried about unpredictable change. Like they're worried right now about coverage for hepatitis, which could be very expensive. And when we have such a small state and small state budgets, that creates a little bit of more conservative behavior. But I really have gotten some good-hearted discussions and vibes out of HMSA and other insurance companies today even. So I think it's going to happen. And I honestly think we'll be proud of it at the end of the year.
And better to have some of the burden removed than none of the burden.
That's definitely true, too, because the truth is some families can spend $50,000 or more per year on the therapy that their child needs, their son or daughter needs. It's a lot more sons, I guess, than daughters. But and for many years, and that can be $500,000-$600,000 over the course of a lifetime or more. But to go in like this and to get a lot of that coverage paid for is going to make a big difference for kids.
Dr. Lee, you deal with so many families, and you see them have some of these frustrations that Josh Green just talked about. How do you talk to your patients about that when you see what they can, what they can't do? How does that affect the way they're able to make decisions for their children?
I see about 5 families per week with autism, and it's difficult for them when we are able to make a diagnosis but not give them optimal treatment. Other families have been asking for resources in order to give them ABA therapy. And I have
heard...
And
that's the applied behavior analysis.
Applied behavior analysis, right. And as Senator Green said, many of them will spend $30,000 to $50,000, but the majority of them aren't able to afford that, and so they opt for the standard of care, which in this case is going to be lower than what we can or should provide for them.
So give us a sort of a comparison of what that standard of care looks like and what a child should have. And obviously, every child is different, and you can't make it cookie cutter. Mm-hmm. But if you were to draw some distinctions of this is what we would like to give a child, and this is what very often the family can afford to do, what does that look like?
Some of the research studies suggest that optimally you'd want to give a child about 20 hours a week of ABA therapy, if not more than that. And this is if you begin it at a very young age. So the earlier,
under four?
Right, right. So earlier the diagnosis, earlier the intervention, better the outcome. So if we can provide somewhere around 20 to even 40 optimally hours per week of ABA-based therapy, then we may get the best outcome possible. But with what we have here, families aren't able to afford any therapy at all in many cases. And so they are able to receive minimal therapy or whatever therapies they're getting through peripherally through speech and language therapy or school-based therapies.
Which sounds as if it's just a huge gulf between what it is that you would even minimally request, even if we're 20 hours, not 40 hours of the ABA, and just the very bare bones of anything that they might get if they're even at school or able to find a practitioner. How many children do you know that can't find a practitioner or families that you see percentage-wise?
Are you talking about a practitioner, an ABA practitioner?
An ABA practitioner or one where they're able to access it at all because of cost
issues? We have about 60, I believe 60 or so board-certified behavioral analysts in Hawaii.
Entire state?
That may not be enough. But the access to that care has been poor because their insurance companies are not mandated.
But it seems there's also the issue of if there's not enough, then already you sort of have a gate there to go through because you have
exactly.
to find somebody. Then you have to have an insurance company that's willing to pay for that particular provider.
Several barriers to care.
And you've got to have the money.
Exactly. Several barriers to care, to accessing care. And that's why this bill is so important that we can at least begin to open up ways where they can access care.
Tonight we're talking about the bill that will be heard tomorrow that will allow there to be coverage for autism diagnosis and treatment. And we want to hear what you have to say. We talk a lot about autism on this program over the last 15 years, and we always have very rich discussions. Now, are we ready to be able to say that this should be covered for children, for families who have autistic children? We want to hear from you. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. If you have a family with an autistic child, if you are facing some of these issues, we especially want to hear from you. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. The story that we just heard Dr. Lee talk about, families and all those barriers to being able to get just even what he would see as being basic care for a child with autism. How is that similar to what you've seen or maybe dissimilar to what you've seen in other states? Is Hawaii worse off?
Not really. Hawaii is in a similar situation to what most states were in a decade ago because most states faced a shortage of qualified providers. Most families in most states were unable to access care, even if there was a provider available, purely because of the money. So it's a classic situation of if you build it, they will come. We have seen in state after state, once there is a mandate for insurance coverage for applied behavior analysis, the provider pool expands dramatically. Nobody's going to come and set up shop here, or few people are going to come and set up shop here if there's not a consistent funding stream available. But once there is, you'll see that number triple or quadruple within a matter of a couple of years, I would suspect, based on what we've seen in other states.
Unlike other places, though, where people can drive maybe to another state or maybe to another county, you got to get on a plane here, which puts another barrier, which we didn't talk about a moment ago, if you can actually find someone. So you say that we're a decade behind and we've got some of these other barriers. It looks like we are in perhaps a worse position than a lot of the other states might have been.
Well, certainly that's a factor. Your geography is a factor that you're going to have to develop even more capacity in Hawaii than other states have had to develop.
Senator Josh Green, you know that we've been talking for a long time about health care on the Neighbor Islands versus on Oahu. How much of a barrier do you see with those providers who may be more Oahu-centric and families who are on neighbor islands to Oahu who aren't able to access that care or have to come here for it?
The classic answer, it's about twice as difficult to find any specialty provider. We have a 20% or 22% shortage on all of all disciplines, and this is a unique one as well because though the science is there and these providers are extraordinary, because there hasn't been the ability, like Lori said, to get coverage, they haven't developed and flocked here. It's about 40% on the neighbor islands for specialty services, whether you're trying to find a terrific neurologist or developmental scientist like Ryan Lee sitting to my left, or an orthopedist, you know, like Dr. Bilotti or someone on the Big Island. It's harder to find people. But this is going to be a very well compensated service, and there's going to be a lot of children that have had it breaks my heart, but a pent-up need for this service. So the moment that we have coverage, and like I said, I'm very confident that we'll pass it this year, families will clamor for these services. They will encourage us to make sure that we do everything we can to get other providers to come. And you will see people in the healthcare disciplines go back for additional training because it's such a wonderful thing to take care of a child that's got autism, because the changes in that child's life and in the family's life are profound and really meaningful. So it's kind of in many ways a happy discipline to work in because you're working with wonderful, loving children. We'll see a lot of providers, but there will still be challenges in Kau and in Waianae in rural areas, just like we have for all other disciplines. And I don't want to give anyone a false hope that the problem will be solved the day we pass the bill, but we will be on the right path.
We're talking tonight about autism legislation that would cover insurance that would cover the cost of diagnosis and treatment for children with autism. And we want to hear what you have to say, particularly if this is relevant to you and your family. 941-3689 is our number. If you call us from Oahu and from the neighbor islands, or if you're listening to the live stream, you can get to us at 877-941-3689. Going to Amanda calling us from Haleiwa. Aloha, Amanda. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha, Beth Ann. Thank you so much for taking my call and for this important conversation that you're having on tonight's show.
A pleasure.
I was just hoping to add some clarification for information on the number of behavior analysts in the state. I represent the Hawaii Association for Behavior Analysis. I am the current president. And as Dr. Lee mentioned, there's not as many of us as we would like, but we currently do have 110 practitioners that are certified that now live across the Hawaiian Islands. And we do have, as Senator Green mentioned, a large proportion who are residing in Oahu. So about 80% currently live in Oahu. And it is much more difficult for individuals to get services on neighbor islands, even if there were a funding source. But I would agree with Lori as well that if you build it, we will come. Those of us who are here are currently doing our best to sustain our profession until we can get this insurance pushed through, because we certainly care about the families and we see a lot of individuals struggling as well.
Amanda, I'm really glad you called. So give me a sense of how many families do you work with? What's your capacity?
I actually have a private consulting business, and I have about 7 families that I work with directly, but I also work part-time at a local private school that tends to cater to children on the autism spectrum. And the number of families who are just not receiving services is heartbreaking. It's devastating and hard for me to remain composed while I share that information with you. And as Dr. Lee mentioned, there's really a lack of resources. And together, these wonderful individuals have been working with the community to help build that capacity and bring the resources into the state, which the Hawaii Association for Behavior Analysis has been working adamantly to do as well.
Can you put a number behind that heartbreaking amount of kids that you know who can't be serviced, even just in the one school that you're talking about?
In the one school I'm talking about, I would say we have probably 60% of the children who are receiving, you know, pretty quality services through the private school, but not at the level, not ABA services, not the intensive degree that they need. And I can't put a number. I can just say it's in the thousands, possibly tens of thousands of individuals who are not receiving medically necessary treatment.
Amanda, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Bethany.
Going now to Jennifer calling us from Waikoloa. Aloha, Jennifer. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a son who is just turning 17, and we were lucky enough to catch him early enough, like right before he turned 3, and he got the ABA therapy, and he's doing very well. He's been able to be mainstreamed in school. But now that he's 17, I mean, and he got probably 40 hours a week until he was 7. And I have to say he's doing well because of that. Now that he's almost 17 and he's going to be transitioning out of school, now we find a lack of, you know, I don't know what to do next. And I was wondering if there's anything in the future that might be coming up with any legislation or anything that would help out parents of kids that are older and not in school anymore.
Good question. Lori, what have you seen in other states? And then we'll talk about what we've got here.
We're facing that precise issue everywhere. Children are falling off a cliff when they graduate from high school, and children with special needs can stay in high school until they're 21 or 22 in most states. So there's a little more time before they fall off that cliff, but many graduate from high school and then sit at home for years trying to figure out what to do. And it's so unfortunate because many, probably most children, individuals with autism, can become gainfully employed if we put the resources, if we put a structure in place to help those individuals figure out what an appropriate placement would be.
So what would that look like?
Well, for instance, I think that planning for employment needs to start at about age 13. So often now, individuals with autism start thinking about what am I going to do after high school when they're about 17 or 18 or 19. We need to have career counselors in the schools who are trained to place individuals with autism, and they need to start thinking, particularly if it's a more severely affected child, as soon as they hit the teenage years, and then spend that next 10 years or so, 8 to 10 years, getting the child ready. If that means an internship in various employment placements, if it means one-on-one counseling or guidance, whatever it takes, you're investing over that period of 8 to 10 years in a way that will pay off for the rest of that individual's life. So we've got to put those resources into.
And potentially not be a burden on the rest of us.
Exactly. Individuals with autism, most of them, are capable of earning incomes, and they want to. They want to, and they can be extraordinary workers. You find people on the high-functioning end of the spectrum can be fantastic in high-tech jobs.
They can be brilliant. I mean, utterly brilliant.
Absolutely. And in fact, there are now placement agencies that are springing up around the country and around the world seeking to find individuals with Asperger's or high-functioning autism and placing them into engineering, tech, accounting-type jobs. And even on the lower end of the spectrum, my child is nonverbal, for instance, and some might think, well, there's no way a nonverbal individual could be gainfully employed. I absolutely disagree. He can't talk, but he is a master sorter and matcher. We started when he was very little, helping him understand how to match shapes and colors, and now he can match or sort anything. Well, imagine a factory with an assembly line. And as items are coming off the assembly line, somebody has to inspect. Maybe it's a nail or a screw or a bolt. Somebody has to inspect every one of them and pull out ones that are flawed. My son could do that better than anybody and would enjoy it. So you just have to be creative in thinking about what the opportunities are.
And starting younger than perhaps you would with a child who hasn't even begun to think about what he or she wants to be in life. I mean, you wouldn't probably say to your 13-year-old, what do you want to do for the rest of your life? But with your point is that with a child who has either they're high-functioning Aspie kids, you could certainly do that. Certainly what anyone on the spectrum to be able to invest the time so that that child can go off and have a productive life in a way that would also be meaningful to an employer.
Absolutely.
But it's going to take a little bit more investment during those teenage years than it would with an average child.
Yes. I didn't start thinking about what I wanted to do with my life until about a week before college graduation. These kids...
You too, huh?
Me too. These kids need to have someone trained to help them think about it and help them figure it out at an early age.
All right. We got lots of callers on the line. If you want to join us, now's the time, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. We're going now to Alex calling us from Pearl City. Aloha, Alex. Thanks for your patience.
Yeah, hello. Yeah. My name is Alex. I have a daughter that's high-functioning autism. And my question to you, and is it a legislature you have with you? Or
Yes.
Yes. Been using because, you know, we can't afford, you know, the behavior modification or ABA method with our income. We've been using alternative methods of working with their autism, which have had some success. And I was wondering, is the legislation, you know, leave some clause in there for people like us that want to try alternative methods?
Yes.
So what's covered?
That's a great question. The idea is not to prescribe only ABA therapy. It's to do whatever's best for each family. We know that that works for a lot of families with a child that has autism. But we also know that whatever the family and their physician and their psychologist or their care coordinating team decides, that's what we want to have recommended for coverage. So in your case, let's say your daughter's 14 or 15 or could be a younger child. Something's just not working. We hope that their psychologist or developmental specialist will recommend a different course of treatment. And the idea is, at least out of the gate, to have the insurance companies pay for what's recommended by the professional. And really that means the family and the professional, because we know that the families know their children much better than any doctor like me or Ryan can know. So I think you're doing the right thing. I'm so sorry that you haven't already been able to access coverage. We have a really tricky healthcare system in this country, but the right people at the right time seem to be coming together, hopefully, to help you and your daughter and your significant other and so on.
Well, I really appreciate that, and I wish you all the luck. I think what you're doing is very heroic. And the bottom line with my family, and I just want to make this known, is that we'd like to heal our daughter. We just don't want to, you know, treat her signs and symptoms and all the stuff that I've done a little research on. We want to heal our daughter, and I think there are a lot of parents out there who feel the same way. They want to heal their kids. It's not just treatment we're looking for, and I think this is a big step in that direction. Thank you very much.
You bet. I have an 8-year-old daughter also at home,
so
and I know what you mean. I really do.
All right. Thank you.
You bet.
And if you're just joining us tonight on Town Square, we're talking about autism, and we're looking at a piece of legislation that will be heard tomorrow. And the idea behind it is that if you have an autistic child, you might be able to get the diagnosis and the treatment for your child covered by insurance, something that Senator Josh Green was advocating last year. Didn't happen then. He thinks that this year may just be the year that it does. But we want to hear from you, and if this is affecting you and your family especially, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. We're joined tonight by Lori Unum. She is a lawyer, professor, mother of three, including one autistic child, and she's the one who wrote the groundbreaking autism insurance legislation for South Carolina, Ryan's Law, on which 37 other states have been modeled, and that's only in the last 7 years. Hawaii is not among them, but they could be, or it could be, soon. 941-3689 if you have a question or a comment. 877-941-3689 is the number if you're calling us from the neighbor islands. Also with us tonight is Dr. Ryan Lee. He is a neurodevelopmental pediatrician at Shriners Hospital, and he deals with many families with autistic children. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Marie calling from Waipahu. Aloha, Marie. Welcome to Town Square. Thanks for your patience.
Hi. My question is, I hope they pass the bill which would include young adults like my son, because, you know, once you're out of high school, there is nothing left for him. You know, we're struggling just to find basic services.
I think that same sentiment was echoed by a caller just a little while ago. And, Lori Unum, you were saying that this is something that the rest of the country is also struggling with. It's not just our families here in Hawaii.
But here's my other problem is, okay, we do have coverage. We have dual coverage. But see, even though we get this coverage, a lot of the people who do ABA service will not take my son because they don't have room or, you know, they're working with all the younger children.
Which goes back to the number of people and having access and having the kind of providers that would be able to deal with as many families as need to have services. Nothing that I think we're going to get solved at this very moment, but as you've heard our panel talk about a little earlier tonight, if you were listening, that the thought is, well, as Lori Unum was saying, if you build it, they will come, and we'll be able to have more providers drawn because the need will be there. Simple supply and demand. Josh Green.
But I think it's the age.
Yeah, I think you make a very good point, caller. A part of this dialogue is specifically about covering autism spectrum. Another large thing that's happening right now as we have this discussion is really changing the way we have a look at our whole healthcare system. And it's in a dynamic period of change right now. I'm not talking just about the, Obamacare bill that was passed that we've all talked about at great length. I'm talking about we're looking now at what are the right things to do. A lot of times care that's not invasive, but actually is a little bit more compassionate and focused on prevention and helping people through chronic illness, that's becoming the focus. And in one way, you can look at autism as a chronic disease. And I don't mean to minimize it, God forbid, in any way, shape, or form, because I know how serious it is for families and for the children. But this is something that we know is going to be with people for their whole lives. And so that focus on our healthcare system's change is part of this dialogue. And so I'm hoping that in our generation, you and me with our little kids, that we see that the focus shifts away from just acute care, just thinking we can fix it today in America, and instead a much broader focus on care for everyone who has illness, but early on instead of at the end. And so that's really what's happening. And when we get through this first step and get coverage that may not be 100% for every child, people will quickly see the benefit to both the families and society to expand it significantly, to provide additional services. When you have kids getting better, when you have children that are in their teens and older, other systems of support will develop because there will be a whole quote-unquote industry of need for people who have children with challenges. And so I'm pretty optimistic if we can get through this first phase that families like you will also see some collateral benefit.
Thanks very much, Marie, for the call. Phone lines are lighting up, so we're going to go to our callers. John from Kaneohe. Aloha, welcome to Town Square.
Hello. I had the good fortune to work with 0-3 under the Department of Health and School-Based Behavioral Health, mainly in the Leeward District. And so I'm one of my sort of comments and then a question. At 0-3, really a primary goal was to identify, young children as early as possible so they could get the services they needed and then to make sure they got them provided. And it didn't matter what the coverage was. In school, at the point where they become under DOE, which is when they're four, the same really rules apply. Any condition that interferes with the child's, future or current academic progress can be addressed. And I saw and worked with many children with those difficulties, and particularly in the Leeward District, well, that's where I was, so I was able to observe that it was always impressive. So, sort of spirit of most of the principals and the teachers. And, once they knew a child's difficulties, just a matter of, getting resources and bringing them to bear on the kid, whatever the age, pre-3 or later. So my concern is, because school is a great place, whether it's preschool or whatever level, it's a great place for these kids to get those services so they can practice them in the settings that are the regular setting. So is there any aim in the bill to try to make sure that the resources for those programs are there and increase, because that's been a problem as a budget?
To make sure that they're school-based or at least accessed via school. Dr. Lee.
John, thank you for your work with the 0-3 program. I think part of the bill tries to access care for the diagnosis and the appropriate diagnosis for the child with autism. And so many of the children in the 0-3 program are identified as having a developmental delay of any sort, whether it be a motor delay, a language delay. And the diagnosis is not specifically clarified. And so if we would like to clarify that further, I think that the children need to be presented to either a specialist or somebody who is comfortable with making a diagnosis of autism before we can target the therapy. A diagnosis can be very important in choosing which types of therapies and what intensity of therapy we can give to the child. We are a state of limited resources, and so creating appropriate diagnostic teams may be a benefit in using those limited resources to provide care.
His concern, though, that this still be sort of accessed through the school aspect of this, too.
Yeah, there's certainly no cuts, John, in the bill at all. I mean, if anything, we're trying to redirect a lot of care. At least the way I handle the committee is I'm focusing on children, developmental issues, and then drug and alcohol addiction, all big issues in society. And in this case, in your question, I think we have to expand services at the schools. But I think that the benefit of being able to provide insurance coverage and having, say, children referred to Dr. Lee will be immense, because then he and his team will be able to say, okay, these are the services that we can provide through, say, an ABA specialist, but these are the additional support services that we'd recommend through the IME at your school, or that they can contact certain schools and say, which of you have certain specialty services that fit this son or daughter of a patient. So I really think it will help to focus where we put resources. We won't be cutting anything out of the DOE.
Laura, you had something to add?
One thing I wanted to add is that just from a philosophical standpoint, I think it's not appropriate to rely solely on the schools to treat our children's medical conditions. Autism is a medical condition. My son was diagnosed by a doctor, not by a school principal, and treatment was recommended by a doctor. The schools certainly have a role to play, but under federal law, under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, the school's role is limited to addressing the academic deficiencies. And children with autism have far more than academic deficiencies. Many of them do. So it is appropriate for health insurance to play a role as well. And that's what Senator Green's bill will add to the mix.
Tonight we're talking about autism. If there is something that you don't really understand about this bill, now would be the time to ask. If you have a child on the autism spectrum, call now. Our line is open for you, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. You just heard Lori Unum talk. She is with Autism Speaks based in New York. She's the head of state government affairs, and she's here in Hawaii to lend her voice to the legislation that we will hear tomorrow in committee, in your committee, Senator Josh Green. Also here with us is Dr. Ryan Lee from Shriners, who deals with many, many families who have children on the autism spectrum. And if that includes you, too, and you have a question or a concern about how this might benefit you, good time to call 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going now to Paul, calling us from downtown. Aloha, Paul.
Aloha. Yeah, this is Paul Austin. I wanted to alert your listeners and your panel members to two class action lawsuits that are pending in federal court here that directly affect and benefit the children we're talking about. The first lawsuit basically requires the Department of Education to provide continuing services to every special education child up to age 22, not age 20, which is where the cutoff that the DOE unilaterally imposed has stopped services to many kids. And any special education child who did not get a regular diploma is entitled to continued services. And in our community, there are close to 2,000 kids now as old as age 26 who are entitled to compensatory services under a federal court order. The second lawsuit rose out of the fact that a year ago, Pat McManaman, the head of the Department of Health and Services, testified to the legislature that it had no obligation to provide ABA services to children eligible for Medicaid and EPSDT services. That was a lie then, and in fact, in the last month, the state has reversed course and acknowledged that it has to provide EPSDC and Medicaid services to all autistic children up to age 20. And as a result, I mean, there'll be millions of dollars available through Medicaid to kids who previously were not allowed these ABA services.
Paul, I think that Senator Green wants to answer you on that one, too.
Paul's right on the mark. You're exactly correct. These are going to be dollars very, very well spent from the Medicaid budget. And it was clear that we were right in committee that these services should be available to children with autism. And that's a reality as of now. I have, you know, we have the documents. Believe me, I've got many, many copies of them in my office demonstrating that Medicaid now will cover the service. And we're just really, this bill is about parity so that HMSA and Kaiser and everyone in the state, they know the right thing to do is to provide coverage for the services that children with autism or autism spectrum need. So you bring up the right legal points. I look forward to seeing what kind of resources can be brought to bear to those families who do have children that were referenced by some of our earlier callers that are in their 20s. That will be fantastic. Maybe a little late, but not lost. And so I will be happy to see them get some damages and be able to pay for some additional life services. So you're doing great work, I think, and I think that we want to see full parity for coverage. That's what I guess my message is.
All right, we're going to go back to the phones now and to talk to Keith calling us from Nu'uanu. Aloha, Keith. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi, how do you do?
Hi there.
Nice to hear Paul call in right before me. I didn't know he was going to. I'm a special education attorney. I do most of the cases against the Department of Education here. I didn't hear the beginning of the conversation, but I wonder, you know, how is this insurance legislation going to dovetail with the provision of services that are required under the IDEA? And I got to mention that I completely disagree with your attorney there that the IDEA requires only academic services. It's academic and related services. So I wonder, you know, is the Department of Education going to be able to utilize the funding that the this legislation is proposing in order to provide services within the school system?
Well, I think there may be something erroneous there in saying that that's going to be providing funding because you're really trying to be able to get coverage through one's insurance.
Right. Yeah, I suppose there could be some scenarios in which schools might contract with therapy teams. I don't know exactly what the mechanism would be for those revenues. But the core of the bill, this bill, is for all individuals with private insurance to have their services, if they need them for autism, to be covered. And so the children that would be affected would have their diagnosis, they would have the prescription for therapy, and they would begin to get it. It would not mean that they couldn't or shouldn't get additional therapy while at school.
And that's to go back to the point of how it would dovetail, that would be it.
That's right.
All right, we're going to go back to the phones now. We've got another caller from South Kona, Liz, calling us. Aloha, welcome to Town Square.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. First of all, thank you, everyone, for picking up this fight. Since my son was diagnosed at age 3, he's now 21. It is a war to get services. My son's severely disabled, and his disability hasn't been the blockage. It's been the services. And I am really hoping that, number one, with having insurance pay for these services, it will not only increase the ability to get him diagnosed, but increase the ability to find skilled therapists, which we are desperately in need. DOE, who is supposed to, by federal law, take every avenue they can to get people to fill these spots, feel that offering positions of a 90-day hire with no insurance and you can lose your job in 90 days is not a way to get quality people. I've been threatened by district that we can't find anyone to work with your son, so we're shipping him to the mainland. So that's an over-my-dead-body issue. But it really comes down to training. So I'm hoping if there's more money going into, you know, this, that there can be more training at the school and the
Well, earlier in the show, and maybe, you know, if you just joined us recently.
I may have missed it. My husband said, get on the radio. Listen.
Okay. Well, if you missed any part of the show, the earlier part of it, we will archive it, and you'll be able to access it probably tomorrow. I think it's going to be actually uploaded around midnight tonight, but you'll be able to have access to it on the archive for Town Square, which is on the HPR2.org archive. Just look under talk shows on the dropdown. You'll see Town Square. Click that, and you'll be able to access it. But I want to talk to you, Dr. Lee, about this, because part of what everyone keeps talking about is, well, you know, we couldn't find them. There weren't enough people. I mean, you hear the anxiety and the frustration in these parents' voices. And this is not unlike the parents, I'm sure, that you talk to, who also feel that they haven't been able to find just the right person for their child and then also be able to pay for it, as we talked about way early in the show. How do you see that happening to be able to get more of those people trained? I mean, will there be a training component happening, not just drawing people here because, you know, there's supply and demand and people will pay for this, but to be actually training so that we can meet our own demand?
Yeah, it won't happen immediately, but I think that there will be training that comes with centers that are able to support more professionals that want to be here. Right now, there's a shortage, probably because there is no mandated health care payment for it. And so if we can bring in, as Lori was saying earlier, professionals that are extremely skilled at treating autism with ABA and other forms of therapy, then the standard of care may elevate. Now, I've heard from a lot of families in our clinics, in fact, that they want to move to the mainland just to get services, similar to the caller, except that she was told that their child would have to move. But some of our families are wanting to move to the mainland for services, and it's a sad thing to hear from them. I don't want to hear that any longer. I'd like for them to want to stay in Hawaii because we are setting a new standard of care for the care of autism. And my hope is that we become leaders one day in the Pacific of the care of autism.
Tonight, if you'd like to join us to ask a question or to voice your ideas about the legislation that we're all going to be hearing tomorrow in a public hearing, Josh Green has introduced Senate Bill 791, and it's going to be looked at tomorrow with the idea of, should insurance be covering autism diagnosis and treatment? A lot of families who would have thought that would have made a big difference in their lives, maybe you're one of them. We want to hear from you, 941-3689 if you're on Oahu, or 877-941-3689 if you call us from the neighbor islands. And we have Kristen on the phone from Maui. Aloha, Kristen. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha. Thank you so much for having me on. I just kind of wanted to circle back to some of the conversation about professionals across the islands as well as some of the training. I am a board-certified behavior analyst, and I work for Bayada, the largest provider of BCBAs. So we employ the highest number of BCBAs in the state currently. For myself, I'm on Maui. There are people on Kauai and Oahu as well. And I think it really circles back to what Lori had discussed about if you build it, they will come. There are professionals here. We are ready to provide the services. And unfortunately, there isn't a steady funding source or a stream in which we can really make that happen. And so I think that's a good part of the issue, you know, and definitely going to be addressed in this bill, that if insurance mandate was something for Hawaii, we would see families being able to access services at a much greater level. And then just kind of circling back to the training comment, the University of Hawaii has started a program. It started in the fall of this year, so they are training behavior analysts. And so that's definitely a great development in our state because we haven't had a local program previously.
Kristen, thank you very much for that piece of information. Thank you for your call.
Absolutely.
We have been talking about autism tonight and looking at whether or not this is going to get covered for a lot of families. And you talk about the hundreds of thousands of dollars over the lifetime of a child, that early part of a child's life, and what kind of investment to make for that. But as we deal with the parent, I mean, they deal with the child, there's also the parent, there are also the other children. Now, Laura, you have two other children. And what happens with them in this situation? Are there other family-related autism services that should be also covered, because you're not just dealing with one person in the family, you're dealing with the whole family?
Well, certainly autism impacts the entire family. Parents stop working, siblings, don't necessarily have the same opportunities that their peers might have because of an autism diagnosis in the family. And we've never attempted to have health insurance pay for the services that other family members might need. Health insurance is for health-related treatments.
But what about mental health?
Well, if there's a mental issue that that would otherwise be coverable, certainly it should be. The bills that we have tried to get passed have related specifically to the individual with autism, which is not to say that there aren't definitely issues that, that other members of the family will encounter. But nothing about this bill in particular reaches the other family members.
Well, there are many things about this bill that may not reach as far and wide as both you and Josh Green would like. But in looking at how you have families integrate in this, now, Dr. Lee, you deal with families. And, you know, we always like to think, well, this is for the child, or we talk about the child, but you're really talking about the family, aren't you?
I think the families are going to appreciate access to care for diagnosis and for treatment. That really is a relief for them. Those are the things that cause a lot of anxiety in families' lives. Where am I going to get care? And how am I going to get appropriate diagnosis?
And how does that impact the rest of the family and their lives, their health, both mental and physical?
Anytime we have a child, not just with autism, but whenever we have a child with a healthcare problem, the parents are integral in their care. And the whole family can benefit. For example, children with sleep disorders. If a child doesn't sleep, the whole family doesn't sleep too. Many children with autism have sleep problems. And so if we can get the child to have a good sleep regimen, then the whole family can sleep well at night. And so we hope that similarly, if we can help children with autism, that we're going to help the families in a secondary manner.
And from a financial standpoint, so many families who are trying to provide their child with autism treatment but who don't have insurance coverage will spend their other child's college savings account, or they will take out a second mortgage on their home. I have run into family after family who has filed bankruptcy because they're trying to provide the care to their child without the benefit of insurance coverage. So it's clear that it impacts the entire family in so many ways, not just health-related, but financial as well.
And if you could add, this is Josh, you know, we've talked about the cost to society as well. Laura, you were very clear about that last time we spoke, that there's a very large cost to society if we don't provide good care. What was that number?
Yes, Harvard put out a study in 2007 indicating that the lifetime societal cost for caring with one individual with autism is $3.2 million if that child doesn't get this intensive intervention and make the kind of progress that we know children can make. So if you take the prevalent statistic that you gave at the start of this show, 1 in 68 children impacted, multiply that times $3.2 million per child, you can see that Hawaii is going to have a huge tsunami-type impact on the state coffers if we don't get these children the help they need.
And then pair that with what we would expect to spend by having an insurer cover them.
It pales in comparison. So a very, very small amount of cost relative to the cost to society will be going in for insurance coverage, even if it's several hundred thousand dollars for those families that, you know, have the challenge and heartbreak of a child that needs so much help. That the transformation of that child, just because we gave them a couple hundred thousand dollars of very good care, probably through ABA therapy, maybe through other supportive therapy like that dad recommended for his 8-year-old, we not only will have a good life spared a lot of suffering and the heartache for the families, but also society and all those programs that will be required, because we are a heartfelt state in Hawaii. But those millions of dollars can be repurposed and redirected to all of these other things that people and parents have mentioned tonight, because we'll have either productive individuals that will be working, because we have lots of jobs in Hawaii in general, or we just won't have all that loss of time and health.
Well, speaking of time, we're coming toward the end of the hour. We want to get another caller in. Christy calling us from Aiea. Aloha. Welcome to Town Square.
Thank you for having me. I wanted to make a comment and ask a question. My son has autism, and for a year
he didn't learn anything. He didn't know his name. He couldn't. He didn't know who we were. We started ABA therapy a year ago, and also found him a MAPS doctor, a pediatrician specialized in special needs. And he now talks. He knows who we are. He knows who he is. Therapy and the proper medical treatment, because like she said, this is a medical condition, has been invaluable. Like, my son stopped growing, and now it's, I mean, the sky's the limit. So I look at it like, if your child had cancer, the health insurance company could never tell you, I'm sorry, we can't get chemo. I mean, ABA therapy works. We know it works. We have documentation that it works. And I really believe that this should be automatic for every family that deserves what my son has. My question is, we have kept my son in private school so that he can continue with his ABA therapist and also get the socialization and the education that's important in being part of the school system. We've had a lot of trouble with the public school in allowing his ABA therapist to go to school with him. Is there any talk or conversation as this, if this legislation passed, as to what environments these therapists would be allowed to work in? Are they going to be allowed in school?
There's nothing in the bill that would prohibit a therapist from working in whatever environment is needed, whatever's medically necessary for the child at that time. The way this is played out in other states is that if the therapist says the child needs to be in the home environment right now because he's two and home is the typical environment for a toddler, then ABA is paid for at home. If the child is trying to learn how to go to a McDonald's and order a hamburger, then therapy is paid for at McDonald's. If a child is trying to learn how to not be afraid of a hand dryer in a public bathroom, then therapy might take place at Walmart. And if a child is trying to learn how to integrate back into a school environment, and that's the appropriate setting for a child at that age, then insurance should be paying for the therapist to help that child integrate back into the school setting. So that's the way it's supposed to work.
So there's no prohibition of where that is going to happen if that's at school. Do you know of schools that regularly welcome an ABA therapist with that child?
I do, but I also know of schools that are very resistant to having an ABA therapist come into the classroom.
And which do you see more of?
Well, we're still probably at a place where schools are more resistant to having the therapist in the classroom. I think it's probably, frankly, a violation of mental health parity law for the school to treat autism that way, because if a child had a heart condition and a cardiologist needed to come in and do something with the child, or if a child had diabetes or whatever else needed to take place in the school setting, I think that would be allowed. So I think it's discriminatory against children with autism not to permit the professionals who are delivering medically necessary service to perform it wherever needed.
All right, we're going to let that be the final word. Lori Unum, thank you so much for being here from Autism Speaks, and we'll look forward to see what happens with your bill tomorrow, Senator Dr. Josh Green, and to Dr. Ryan Lee from Shriners. Thank you all for being here tonight. As we said, the hour evaporated, and we have to say goodbye. Thank you all for joining us tonight for Town Square and for your calls. I'll see you tomorrow morning for The Conversation. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Aloha.